All right, let's get into our study. This is one of my favorites. Mark 5. Start, get verse 1. Have it ready. Again, Matthew, Mark, and Luke tell this story. John, he's always off on a different tangent than to tell stories. What is interesting about this, at least to me, is remember Mark's gospel is only 16 chapters, and his is just kind of bam, 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 bam. He's writing it to people in Rome that are about to die. They don't have a whole lot of time to get into detailed stuff, so he just has Jesus immediately going here and immediately doing this. This particular story, he devotes 20 verses to it, which is unusual, and it's Matthew who writes a very short version, about 7 or 8 verses, Luke a little bit longer, but of the three Gospels, Mark's the one that has the longest and the most detailed. Now, one of the things we'll find out real quick is two of the versions, and we're not going to read all three, we're just going to use Mark's tonight. Two of the versions have one demoniac, and one of the other, the third version, has two demoniacs. So we take from that there was one who is very prevalent, outspoken, and he probably had a companion, of which one of the other ones added in the two. I believe it's Matthew has the two. Luke mentions the main one. Mark mentions the main one. Now, it's very important, as always, to put the story in context. So, remember last week, Jesus is in the boat. Jesus calms the sea. The disciples say, "What kind of man is this that even the nature will abide to him?" And immediately when they pull into port, to land, immediately we pick right up with this story. So start with Mark 5, verse 1.
Okay. They went across the lake to the region of the Gerasenes. That's a hard word.
If it ain't in English,
when Jesus got out of the boat, a man with an evil spirit came from the tombs to meet him. This man lived in the tombs, and no one could bind him anymore, not even with a chain. For he had often been chained hand and foot, but he tore the chains apart and broke the irons with his feet. No one was strong enough to subdue him, and night and day among the tombs and in the hills he would cry out and cut himself with stones.
Yeah, let's stay there. Yeah.
When he saw Jesus from a distance, he ran and fell at his knees in front of him and shouted at the top of his voice, "What do you want with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? Swear to God that you won't torture me," for Jesus had said to him, "Come out of this man, you evil spirit."
All right, let's stop there. What happened was that they had no idea what to do with people that were demon-possessed. And from all accounts, this was a reality that people would, their lives would get so low that they would be possessed, whether it was true or not, they thought they were. So if you think it long enough, it's a fact. And so what they would do with these people was they would have these tombs or caves, and they would go in and they would literally chain these people in there and keep them in there. Now, how they got fed, I have no idea. And but from all accounts, this guy, along with another of his running mates, they were very possessed and strong. And whenever people would come along the shore, since they were chained, well, they would run out and terrify these people, but the chains would catch them and nothing would happen. I remember one time when I was selling books in the summer, a student call porter, I was up in Lubbock. And I always, when I went up to a farm, I'd rattle the gate and didn't see anything. So I'm about halfway up in this big yard, and all of a sudden comes this big old dog out from under the house. And the first thing I did was just throw my briefcase at him, and I start running, and I knew I wasn't going to make the gate. Well, all of a sudden, he's probably about 2 feet behind me. The chain caught him. You know, next thing I know, he's going, And boy, I thought I was a goner. Well, it's kind of like this with these guys, except this guy was so strong, so demon-possessed, that he had broke his chains. Now remember, the disciples just came. They're marveling over Jesus calming the storm. They walk up on the beach from afar. Here, far, and that's why Mark states that. From afar, here comes this demoniac. And what do you think the disciples are doing?
Running.
They're running. They just take off and run. And of course, Jesus tells him to, you know, be clean. But even that didn't cleanse the demoniac at this point. But he certainly recognized who Christ is. Now pick back up where the demoniac says to Jesus.
He shouted at him, "What do you want with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? Swear to God that you won't torture me." For Jesus had said to him, "Come out of this man, you evil spirit."
Okay, go on. Go on.
Oh, go on? Okay. And Jesus asked him, "What is your name?" "My name is Legion," he replied.
Okay, let's stop there. Why do you think he asked what his name was?
Well, the ancient people in those days believed that once a demon's name was revealed, that he could be subdued.
Mm-hmm.
One thing.
Yeah, no, what their thinking was. In order to identify, isolate, and subdue, you had to know the name. Now, this is how much they felt that this was real. And so here Jesus is. He said, "Be clean," but this was pretty powerful. He says, "Do not torture me." What do you think he meant by that?
Demon said that,
right? Demon said that. We'll see in a minute what the demons want. We'll come back to that one. So Jesus says, because he wants to identify, "What is your name?" And he says, "Legion." Now, most likely, this came... because remember, in this path, there was an occupied country by the Romans, and a Roman legion was 6,000 soldiers. So the Spirit says, "We are legion," signifying that we're powerful and there's a ton of us here. That was the point that the demon wanted to make. There's a ton of us. Were a lot. It was felt the lower that you were, the more demons that you had in you. So here, that it is interesting that the demons bow there to Christ, and he asked their name. Okay, pick up with his name.
"My name is Legion," he replied, "for we are many." And he begged Jesus again and again not to send them out of the area. Now a large herd of pigs was feeding in the nearby hillside. The demon begged Jesus, "Send us among the pigs. Allow us to go into them." And he gave permission.
Okay, now why do you think they wanted to go to the pigs? Did they really dislike PETA that much?
Well, I suppose they felt that they could take a boat anywhere and he'd come out when they wanted to.
Okay. What else?
Well, swine were a symbol of uncleanness.
Okay. What do you think they meant when they said, "Well, don't send us to another country or another region or another..." Actually, what they were saying, "Don't send us to another country, region, or person." Why the swine?
They would still be in the vicinity of that little area, that around that man, too.
Yeah.
They'd still be in that vicinity.
What happens when evilness gets in the presence of God?
Can't survive.
Don't want to survive.
isn't the word region used sometimes to mean hell? Destruction?
Could be. I think that they were really, what they were saying is, we are tired of this. We're in your presence. Don't send us somewhere else where we're going to run across your presence.
Interesting.
So, that's the power that God has when He's recognized. That even the demons understand, we don't want to go up against you.
So you think the demons was just a manifestation of the devil, or I think from a psychological standpoint, you know, all these mental confusion and, you know, I've actually had people say to me that so and so is demon possessed, and I just don't get into that realm because but I wonder if it was actually from the talks I could be, you know.
I think in this particular case, through the insights of Bible commentators and especially the person that wrote Desire of Ages, is that they were so defiled that literally I think they were Satan-based was running their life. And, yes?
What was the last statement you said?
The Desire of Ages says that they were so defiled that Satan was running their life. So I think in this particular case, it was probably some manifestation of demons possessed. I don't think it was mentally, because, well, we're going to see in a second, how else, what got into the swine then, if it wasn't something that was literal?
Well, and I think people can get to a state where they almost turn over their power to
yes.
the devil. I mean, I believe that, and I think, you know, there's a lot of things that occur, and they have to make a decision whether they're going to recover from it or mm-hmm. try to deal with it or just let go to the power that's trying
yes.
to escape. So I don't have any problem with that. It's just...
Yeah. See, here's an object lesson for any person that's rational or thinking, is this is exactly what Satan wants to do to every human being. Satan is not happy just getting you a little bit off the path, even though he likes that. Is if he had his way, he would drag every one of us down to that state. I mean, that's how much he hates us. That's how much he hates God. And he knows that when he does something to us, how much it hurts God. And that's his delight.
So he really doesn't give a rip about us. He wants to get to God.
That's exactly right.
We're useless for the devil.
That's right. And so he would bring us all down there. And even at the end of time, when it's all said and done, and all the saints and all the sinners and Satan himself and his angels bow and say, God is just, God is righteous, the very next thing he does is take those people and rally them for one last effort and say, let's go kill them people. So that is his delight, to bring us down to this stage. Okay, pick up. So here's a bunch of swine. We're told there was 2,000 of them. Big pig farmers in a Jewish country.
But he gave the permission for the evil spirits to come out and went to the pigs. The herd, about 2,000 in number, rushed down the steep bank in the lake and were drowned.
Okay.
Those tending the pigs ran off and to report this into the town. In the countryside, and the people went out to see what had happened. When they came to Jesus, they saw the man who had been possessed by the legion of demons sitting there, dressed and in his right mind.
Okay, let's stop there. Now, let's do some analyzation. Why did Jesus allow the demons to go in to these people living? The only thing they could make money by, probably their fortune, tied up into these pigs, and they lose every one of them. First of all, does God have any concern about animal life?
No.
I think that's a fair question. Got one, it's not an issue. You don't belong to PETA, huh?
Cruelty was an issue at all.
Okay.
Well, I think life is, as the creator of life, it's precious to him.
Absolutely.
So I don't think it's about not valuing life. I think it's also is, in a way, it was humane to the legion, the devil, the spirits to, you know.
It's what they asked for.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
It was almost merciful for them.
Knew that it was going to stir up a lot of knowledge in the community.
Okay. Is this a soul witnessing tool? So the herdsmen, they run back into town and they run up to the owners of these nice little piggies. And they say, you ain't going to believe what's going on. Remember those two demon-possessed guys that everybody's scared of? Well, they're no longer demon-possessed. That's the good news. The bad news is, you ain't got no more pigs. And so all the guys come out, the owners of the pigs come out to see what's going on. And here's Jesus, and here's the two demoniacs, dressed. Somebody must have brought them clothes. Sitting at the feet, peaceful, talking to Jesus. And the rich people have no pigs. Now what do you think their thinking is?
All they can see was dollar signs. Invaded my town and messed up my life.
Okay. What do you think was going through their mind? We're talking about the demoniacs, spirits are out, going to the little pigs. Pigs are dead.
Well, that really revealed them and their life. I mean, here they've probably been annoyed by these two demoniacs, but they really weren't concerned about them. I mean, you know, you think about it, if you thought, I mean, you really think about it, when somebody has made a decision and have let go of something in their life, are we celebrating that, or are we just simply worried about, uh-oh, now they're not going to do this, or now they're not going to do that, or, you know, I mean, I think that's where their mind was. It's just totally on the economics of it.
Yeah. There is a law. Just like the law of gravity, there is a law that when something happens, the first thing a person looks at is what?
How does it affect me?
How does it affect me? That is a law. And that's exactly what they did. One of the reasons that Christ allowed the demons to go into the pigs and they ran off the cliff and killed themselves and died, was it was now an appeal to the owners of these pigs. Which is most important? What you have or the worth of two souls? And it was an appeal to them. And now they had to look within themselves and find out the answer to their own spirituality. What was their answer?
Get out of here.
Just a minute, Leroy. Go ahead.
In Desire of Ages.
Yes.
When Christ confronts the Pharisees about getting their cattle or goat out of the well or the hole, Ellen White comments, she says, any religion that puts the value of a dumb animal above that of a human being is a false religion. Mm-hmm. And that's what the Pharisees were.
Yeah. See, as you notice in the four Gospels, there's never, outside of sometimes with the Pharisees, there's never a direct conversation or an appeal made in where's your salvation. It's always choices put up, and then the choice the person makes reveals to him. Just when the rich and young ruler came, what do I have to do? The great question of all times to be saved. He says, well, what does Bible say? Well, love God, love your man. I've been doing that since I was 2 years old. Well, how did Jesus respond? Sell everything you have and follow me. See? Always puts choices, and the choices reveal where you stand for God. And so when these men came out, they're minus 2,000 pigs, they say, well, let's eat. What's this meat substitute for ham?
Wham.
Wham, oh my goodness. How could I forget that? Let's see, do we move to Wham and be happy over these two lost souls? Or shall we be mad because we've lost our ham? Read on.
When they saw him dressed in his right mind, they were afraid. Those who had seen it told the people what had happened to the demon-possessed man, and told about the pigs as well. Then the people began to plead with Jesus to leave the region.
Why? Pardon?
He took their profit.
Yeah. What's next? What's next? If this guy hangs around here long enough, healing and curing people, what's next for us? That's the decision we always have. See, the rich young ruler. Two reasons he went away sorrowful. Number one, he did not want to give up his earthly possessions. And by the way, in the Jewish tradition, if you were poor, what was that a sign of?
Displeasing God.
Yeah. Yeah. So man, when Jesus said, sell everything you got and follow me, he had two problems. One, he didn't want to give up his richness. Number two is, he didn't want to give up his lofty position. And so it's the same choice with these guys. Man, get out of here. Because no telling where he's going to drive the spirits next if they run across any more. And so all they were concerned about was their wealth, their position. And Jesus used this experience for them to search their hearts. And they came to the conclusion which revealed their spirituality, which was zero. Okay. Read on.
As Jesus was getting into the boat, a man who had been demon-possessed begged to go with him. Jesus did not let him.
Okay.
But he said...
Oh, just to hold on there. Does that seem natural?
Oh, it seems natural for him to want to go.
Absolutely.
I mean, when you've had that experience of healing or being...
Yeah.
I mean, you want to go there.
That's right. Man, you want to hang on to the person that has saved you, made you whole, brought you into wholeness. You're not wanting to let go of him. And so, of course, he begs Jesus to let him go. Jesus says, no. Go ahead.
Jesus would not let him, but said, go home to your family and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and how he had mercy on you. So the man went away and began to tell in the Decapolis how much Jesus had done for him, and all the people were amazed.
Okay. Now, here comes really the crux of the story. They had just a few minutes at the feet of Jesus to absorb whatever the most important message that Jesus could give to them. And they went back to Decapolis. Decapolis Deca means what?
Ten.
There was 10 cities. This was the region they lived in. And we're told about a year later that Jesus came back to this area. These were the first two missionaries to this area. And when Jesus came back, there were thousands waiting to accept, listen, and to hear. Desire of Ages tells us they had a brief discussion with Christ, and then they left. What do you think that Jesus said to these two men that they were able to go and literally change towns that were waiting to accept Him? What would you say if you had less than 30 minutes? Would you go over the 2300-day prophecy?
Oh, yeah.
That's right.
See?
Would you go over the sanctuary? Would you go over... What would you go over that would change 10 towns?
The question is answered in the text. It says, tell them what happened to you.
And what was their message? Their message to these towns was very simple. You know what we were like. We met Jesus Christ. And look what He's done in our life. It's the only message they had a chance to understand. And from that, what have we learned in our Christian witnessing? There's big movements, analyzation. The church, when I got out of school 30-something years ago, went back to school and I was in my 30s, I mastered or studied or whatever. Anyway, I was good at it. On church growth, that's what I specialized in. And because of my interest, I've, through the years, have watched. And we've recently, over the last 10 or 15 years, we've come across what some people say is kind of silent witnessing, or by, you know, churches begin to give marriage counseling and give financial and things like this. And the concept is to bring people to the church. And people would get involved and then say, what do you have? I think that's not a bad program. But the new wave coming now is, believe it or not, is some of the master churches or mega churches are looking at and come to the conclusion the way to spread the gospel is, instead of bringing people to the church, how did Jesus do His ministry? He went out to the people. And so now the pendulum has swung back where it was 30-something years ago when I was involved, is small group home churches. And so you go to Joel Osteen, or you go to High Point over here down the road in Arlington, and some of these other mega churches, and you will find that all of their discussions on the Bible are all through the week. They have tons of home churches, Bible study groups, and all of that. And their church service becomes just simply a praise service. All the study. And they're finding that this is being more effective of reaching the non-church than it is to bring non-church people within the sanctuary. Now the interesting thing is that Jesus mastered this because He went out to the people. I think the most important thing to learn from this story, again, and you know, Mark spends 20 verses on it, was the only message that changes people's lives is what Christ has done in our lives And what He's done in our lives, He can do in your life. And I think that's the most powerful message. We logically can convince people. We can argue the right doctrines and convince people. We can throw out facts and convince people. But I'm not too sure that that changes people's hearts. And there's no powerful testimony than these demoniacs could go out and simply say, "You knew what I was like. I met Jesus. And look what I am now." And when Jesus came back, a year later, thousands of people were waiting, wanting to accept Him. Why? Because they could see how someone changed their life, what He did. What comments do you folks have?
I don't know, it's always stimulating to think about how to, you know, before we reach people or stimulate people to recognize what they're looking for. And, you know, these two demoniacs were there, ran out there, you know, and you think, where was that their last shred of, you know, conscious thing of going out toward Jesus, or they're just doing their normal routine, and yet, look at what happened as a result of that.
Yep.
The power of just putting himself in the presence of Jesus Christ. You know?
Yeah.
And yet, there still must have been something that they chose to respond, because Jesus and God never forces. Somehow they did something that was even the remotest gesture toward God and Jesus, that He responded in a way that... And I mean, I think that way about when people come into counseling. I think they're coming for something they don't have a clue about, but it's this they talk about, you know. And I think, you know, how do you help them realize what they're really needing, not what they think they want to get fixed.
They want the symptoms cured.
Who
were the people that were changed when He came back? All these thousands of people.
The ones in the 10 cities.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who were they?
Just common people.
I know, but from what I'm gathering from the outside reading...
Oh, you mean they were Greeks?
Was Greek.
Yeah, they were Greeks. Yeah.
People who had no preconceived ideas. Maybe a few Jews. But these were Greeks who were open to receive the message of what these men had presented.
You see, if they would have gone into the Greeks and argued doctrine or theology or religion, they would have got creamed. Because the Greeks were masterful at their beliefs, see. And we must remember that is to try to prove that we have... any church has more truth than another church is an immediately turn off.
It's useless.
It's absolutely useless, because all you do is just, you know, you start getting your facts in a row. Best thing you can do is to show why you're different by the way you live your life, and people will start coming to you and ask questions, and they'll ask questions that give you a chance to talk rather than to preach. And I love this story because I've often thought over the years is, you know, what when I begin to study, what could He say to them that would change thousands of lives? And it's the only thing that makes any sense. Not a set of beliefs or a set of doctrines or a set of truths. Tell them what happened in your life.
I'll tell you just about experience in my Sabbath school class. I have about 6 black ladies in my class. One of them's a Baptist, and I pick on her every week. And a few weeks ago, a tall, gorgeously dressed black gal came into our church. And I saw her at the door. I went out there to meet her. And I said, "Jory, have you been here before?" "No." "Well, who did you come to see? Certainly you've got..." "No, I don't know a soul here." "You mean you just decided..." "Yes, just decided to come to the church." And I put my arm around my shoulder. I said, "You don't have any friends here?" "No." I said, "You do now." And these four or five gals, I know exactly where they sit in the church. I took Bishop Rhodes right over there, and I said, "These are your friends." And they surround her. Every time I have a guest, someone comes to visit, I know exactly who to introduce them to. Not one stroke of theological discussion. It is your friends.
That's right.
We care for you. And I'm not conscious of my class, but it grows, and people want to be there to see and witness and experience what's happening.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. People are not interested in truth. They're interested in, does God care for me and hold answers for me in my life? Once they understand that is a truth, that He does care, then God opens up avenues that they begin to understand the truths and the doctrines that we have. But it's never the other way around.
You know, I try never to use the word truth.
Yeah.
When I talk, I say, here are evidences. Evidences of God's life. If it's truth, it's got to be revealed by the Holy Spirit.
That's right.
In a person's heart.
That's right. And that's why our Sabbath school lessons are continually on, is that you'll see the fruit. Any last comments?
Oh, just, we've got 2 minutes. Just since it's getting this time of the year, a little something I was reading was very interesting to me. What did the ancient people think about demons? What were the demons? And I'm finding out that the thought was that, first off, the demons were spirits of the dead. They lived around these tombs. They came out at night. A woman was unsafe out at night. Just give me, the demons would get her. The children had to be in before dark. The demons would get her. A man had to have a light when he got out. The women demons were scrawny, emaciated, almost skeleton-like, with long, stringy hair, long fingernails and toenails. You carry all these things, and there's a list of them. Parallels to Halloween today. That was their thinking of demons. What is our thinking of Halloween today?
Yeah. It's amazing how it works. So, any other comments?
Yes.
Yes.
I want you to know, and I have probably shared this with you before, but many times what we work on here just is a light for me. I soak it in. And many of these things I bring up in my Sabbath school class. And almost without fail, the people are very attentive. They are interested in this discussion. They want to know. Now these writings are just so beautiful, so revealing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to me, once I understood that this whole book is about God, then it just changed everything for me. Otherwise, up until then, I had to, you know, God just searching and looking and punishing and... You better tell, boy, and it just changes the book. Let's have prayer. Father in heaven, help us to understand that the witness that we have for people around us is what you've done in our life. And the best way to preach to people is simply live a life that shows that you care and that you love, that you're sincere, and people will begin to come to us with their questions and their desires and their thoughts. And this opens up avenues where we can share with them how much God has cared for us, and most important, how much God has cared and does care and love them. This changes people's hearts. Help us to always remember what you do in our life will shine out to others. We thank you for this story of the demoniacs. What a powerful story. But you know, Father, as I look in my life, and I'm sure as we look in each life of the people here, we see where we were on our spiritual journey and what you did for us, and we have that same story to share with others. Thank you for your love. We think of Shirley and the Perriman family, and we think of Rob and his family. Be with them. Let them know that we care and love. We give you the honor and praise, and in Jesus' name, amen.